Hi, Jeff. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
Good.
Hey, Keith.
Hey, Jeff. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Angel, I just decided to jump in and start the screen sharing, and I'll defer to you guys as to when you'd like to get started, and or Keith, and we'll jump into it whenever you guys are ready.
Thank you. Hello, Ash. How are you? Welcome to the
Good. Room. How are you?
Good. Don, are we expecting others?
Just Anna, I think. Let me double check to make sure that she accepted it. I can't tell if she accepted it or not.
All right. And you know, Bill? Missed that.
Bill,
I apologize.
Bill is Ash is standing in for Bill. Bill retired from, yes.
Okay.
So with the caveat that I'm not well-versed in the procedures for this committee. I will say this is an informational update, so there won't be a call or a vote or anything at the end. We certainly want all the members involved, but if the angst is getting a quorum, at least in our simplistic understanding, we won't need that. But again, I'll defer back to the group as to who to wait for and when to get started.
Thank you, Jeff. You do I have appreciate a quorum. That. I was just trying to be kind to Anna and whoever we were missing, but we do have a quorum with Angel and Ash and myself here. So what I'll do right now is just call this meeting to order. Don, do we need a roll call or can I just call it to order?
It's up to you. Do you want me to do a roll call?
No, I don't think so. I've looked through past minutes and I just called it to order often. So let's just do that. We'll call this informational meeting to order now at whatever time it happens to be, 11:33, I guess, 10:33 in the morning. Thank you. We have an informational meeting with just a couple items on the agenda. Arizona Senate Bill 1221 is the first item on the agenda. Jeff, are you the one that's going to take this away for us?
I am, and appreciate the time and, you know, adding an additional meeting to everyone's calendars is never ideal. However, given that this bill effectively goes into effect at the end of September, and to comply with it, we're going to have to make some changes in the portfolio, we just thought it was a really good idea to get the committee together to walk through what we're changing. The changes we're making are within the purview of what we have discretion to do as an investment advisor. But, right, it's a state statute. It has some implications, and we felt like walking the committee through it, giving you a chance to think about it, ask some questions. We've got our regularly scheduled meeting in mid-September, I believe on the 14th. You could circle back and answer if there's any questions there, make sure that everybody's comfortable as we're making this these changes to the portfolio to comply with it. So a high level, I want to spend a little bit of time just touching on the bill to refresh everyone what it is. Then we'll talk about the impact and the portfolios that we will need to adjust and or change, how we're going to do that, the impact on the portfolio in terms of who's managing the assets, in terms of what the costs that those managers will be paid for it. There is a change to the overall asset allocation, right? That'll go through and then we'll touch on the timeline. So let me stop and see before we jump into it. If there are any questions. Yeah.
Jeff, I just had one in relation to what you just recently said, that everything that you're doing is in line with your investment advisor contract with us. Does that mean everything that you're doing right now is, and then the law came into effect, and everything that you're doing to help us comply with the law also is within that purview, both what you're doing now and what you plan to do to comply with the law?
Yes, is the short answer, right? Because the law has changed, using the investment managers we're using today isn't going to work. Potentially once this law goes into effect. So we need to make some changes. And it's, you know, big parts of the portfolio. So we want to just walk everyone through that. But yeah, let the minute show. We are in compliance before, in the middle, and after. We will be in compliance with all the regulations. That we can put that in a big font in the meeting minutes. That would be good. And again, this will be better as a conversation. So if you got questions, far away as we go. But I wanted to give you a sense of where we were headed, right? Okay. I am going to have Chad Stapleton, who's on our team, touch on the bill, the language that's in it, and what the impact is, and then I'll start talking about the portfolio. So, Chad, who's been in a number of meetings with us before on this topic, do you want to jump in? I'm already sped up and we're on slide 4, so if you had prepared remarks on the earlier stuff, too bad. We're moving.
All right. Absolutely. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it. And really, slides 4 through 6 of the presentation provide just a brief background from the legislation and a summary to provide the context for the rest of the conversation. As always, a necessary disclaimer that we don't provide legal advice and we can't provide an opinion or interpretation of the legislation. But on slide 5, we have an additional overview of the legislation that was passed last year. Arizona Senate Bill 1221 establishes certain divestment requirements related to Chinese investments in publicly managed funds, requiring these funds to divest from those investments and prohibiting those investments going forward. The overview continues on slide 6, and the legislation outlines definitions, requirements, and exceptions, and it also identifies actions publicly managed funds can do to identify prohibited holdings and investments, doing at least one of the actions that are summarized on the slide at the top. So up next, I'll pass it back to Jeff to review some of these identified exposures of Chinese investments within the trust.
Right. So our first approach in taking this is to say, well, which of our strategies are currently invested in Chinese securities and or could be invested in Chinese securities going forward? And in addition to that, it's been quite a bit of work around the definition of a Chinese security. What does that mean? And we'll get into some of that. This slide covers the existing portfolio. Our domestic equity by prospectus are not allowed, managers are not allowed to go into Chinese or many other non-U.S. securities. And so we do not have current exposure or by prospectus exposure going forward. However, international equity and our fixed income managers do have the ability to access the Chinese market, and that's where we spent our time working. I will also note we put an asterisk on this, the Fidelity International Index. The definition of what is a Chinese security actually can vary based on data vendors. And so this was part of our thought process going into it. We wanted to make our definitions clear and not conflict. In this particular case, there's a shipbuilder headquartered in China listed on the Singapore Exchange. The IFA, which is kind of the traditional international equity index, has it classified as a Singapore company, but MSCI, who generates other indexes, has it listed as a Chinese company, right? So the world, as always, when you get into the details, can get complicated. And I think that just reinforces to us, while having a clear definition in the mandate of what we're implementing, will provide clarity on our approach of how we're approaching these markets. The net effect of this is we need to change out how we're approaching international equity and fixed income so that we are not in violation of this statute going forward. The third, these are the two things we've got to change. Change the international equity, change our fixed income, and we need to step back and rethink the strategic asset allocation. On international equity, we've got a solution with a quantitative firm by the name of Parametric. I'll touch on that in a moment. It will be an indexed mandate that will exclude Chinese, Hong Kong, and Macau securities based on the MSCI definition and indices. Got a question mark there around our potential IPS update. That is not something we're going to address in the meeting today, but it is a conversation we'd like to have with the committee going forward. We think there's room in your IPS to better define what is expected in these categories. Typically, IPS updates take some time, and so we don't want to conflate the two. All of this will work within the existing language. We think there'll be some value getting more specific in the language going forward. On the fixed income side, we're very pleased with the investment managers we've got today. However, all of them have the ability to invest in foreign markets at certain percentages, and at some point in the future could result in us being out of compliance with this rule. So, again, a separately managed account, a customized mandate implementation, and we're actually going to use our internal fixed income team to manage this. We'll talk about the size of the team and their track record. I will say this is the same team that manages many of the balance sheet accounts for the city of Tucson. So it's an asset manager you're already familiar with. They've got a very good track record, and because we can actually control it at the individual security level, you know, again, we've got high conviction. We're not going to have an issue with international equities and securities. Also, because they're part of the organization, the management of this portfolio will essentially be covered in the existing fee you're already paying for us. I don't want to say anything is a no fee. You know, there's fees for everything, but we will be implementing this as part of our current fee schedule. Finally, we got to look at the strategic asset allocation because we're making these changes, right? And specifically removing emerging market equities from the portfolio. What's our expectation for long-term impact on portfolio returns and volatility? So those are the three things high level we're going to get through. Next slide, I think, summarizes the changes we're going to make, where the asset totals are effective as of July 31st, right? Both basis point and kind of annualized dollar amount of fees paid to those asset managers. This is the current environment, and this is the post-implementation environment. So equities remain the same. Domestic equity, I'm sorry, remains the same. International equity, by moving it to an all-passive customized mandate by Parametric, we're actually able to drop the cost pretty significantly because we're not using active management going forward. And on the fixed income side, again, replacing active management with our in-house solution where there's no investment management fee, essentially drops the overall cost of the managers being used in the portfolio by 12 basis points from 18 basis points on average down to 6. Let me stop and just make sure there's a lot of moving parts within that slide. So I want to make sure everybody's comfortable with the data we've got here.
So Jeff, we had separately managed accounts before, correct? These are just now these separately managed accounts are going to be managed by different managers. Is that?
Yes. So let me back up. A separately managed account will be different than the mutual funds or ETFs you're invested in the legal structure, right? So using Janus Overseas as an example, that is a multi-billion dollar fund with thousands, maybe tens of thousands of clients, and they've got an investment policy that currently allows them to invest in China. Okay. How many of those clients are municipalities in Arizona that need to comply with this? Probably a very small number. They're not going to customize what they do. So we then looked for ETFs or mutual fund solutions that were built that we could plug into, and in all honesty, could not find one. Given the size of your portfolio, we were able to approach managers, and a separately managed account is essentially we will open an account and the individual stocks or bonds will be held in the account. We'll roll that up into one line item on performance, but your account will actually own the individual bonds as opposed to shares of a mutual fund or an ETF.
Mutual fund. Okay. Before we were holding shares of a mutual fund, now we would hold whatever we own. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Now you're actually going to own the individual stocks, bonds, so forth and so on. So,
and save $1 million a year in costs by making this change.
Yeah, close to that. As always, there are some trade-offs, right? What you're also giving up is the active management, in those categories. Our international equity active management performance has been slightly below the benchmark over the last several years. That hasn't paid off. The fixed income has actually outperformed the benchmark. So, there is no free lunch. There's a trade-off in it, but this ensures that we're in compliance with the statute. And it's actually a bit of a good segue. I want to let me get to the asset allocation impact in a moment. I just do want to touch briefly. Parametric, and a long-standing, multiple-decade quantitative investment firm, PFMAM and U.S. Bank have an existing relationship with them. They are, in our opinion, the go-to manager when you need customized passive solutions. We use them in fixed income. We use them with clients in equities. It's a partner we've worked with for years. And the size and scale of our relationship, I think, helps here with our, for our clients. We can approach them. We've got all the infrastructure built with them.
performance reporting fees, all of that is built in. But I do want to emphasize they've $750 billion plus in assets under management. They're owned by Morgan Stanley. It's a long time, really high quality professional firm. It's great that we can build a customized portfolio with them. We use them in many instances with clients. So we have high degree of conviction in what we're doing. This is not a first-time one-off thing. And then the next couple of slides, we lay out on slide 15, actually the language at a high level we're giving them. So the specific mandate is securities classified by MSCI to China, Hong Kong, or Macau are not eligible for investment. It's the exact language we've got. So it's a clear mandate, and we've got portfolio monitoring systems that will be checking for that to make sure no errors are made. On the fixed income side, our internal team at PFMAM, has over $1.2 billion in assets under management, really focuses in this area, core fixed income. We manage assets for many, many municipalities, Tucson included, balance sheet assets, governments, agencies, corporates, mortgage back, all very high quality. This is philosophically very much a play defense first approach to the fixed income space. It's going to be high credit quality. It's going to be high liquidity. It's going to be bonds, right? We're not making big interest rate bets with derivatives, with other things that some of the active managers can do. And I don't want to criticize them. They can do well. If you do it well, that can add value. This is going to be a very portfolio. Their returns have been excellent over time. And again, we get the, by mandate, the guarantee that we're not invested in Chinese securities that we simply can't get by prospectus with our existing asset managers. Page 17 is an outline of the investment guidelines that we've given the team to mandate off of. So last piece I'll touch on is the asset allocation. Because we're making changes, right, to what the fixed income portfolio can invest in, and more importantly, what the international equity portfolio can invest in, there is going to be, based on our expectation, an impact on returns and volatility. We internally go through this process annually. Many of our clients tap into it annually, where we look at our mid to long-term projections for asset class returns and circle back to the asset allocation and talk about should a given client, have more in international equity or small cap stocks or fixed income, the different asset classes, right? This is an exercise we do annually. This isn't special to this particular exercise, but it's one that we can leverage in this environment. Page 21 is our, these were published in January, our forecasts for asset class returns for both the next 5 years and for the next 30. And maybe a conversation for a slightly or for a different meeting. Our expectations are U.S. equity returns will be somewhat lower. International equity returns will be a bit higher than average over the next 5 years. We may be right or wrong on these, but these are our projections by all these asset classes. To be clear, your portfolio is not invested in all of these, but we just wanted to show you the work that we've done and where we come from. Here's the slide. Essentially, our internal asset allocation team is taking your portfolio, and these would be our projections based on the current. The important thing here, we think in the short run, is our expectation is a 6.8% return annually over the next 5 years with a 11.2% volatility. By removing Chinese equities, there is a slight hit on performance. 10 basis points on average. We believe we can offset that by actually the fee decrease of 12 basis points. We will see how markets play over the next 5 years. The takeaway here, I think, is there is not a significant impact on performance or volatility based on these changes. Our recommendation, the big change here is going from 7.5% emerging market equity to zero. emerging market equity, we expect to outperform. You simply can't be in that asset class without being in China. But given the overall size of the portfolio, the net impact on a five-year basis should be relatively minor, would be our forecast. Forecasts, I got to include my disclaimer language here. Forecasts are no guarantee of future results, or the past isn't a guarantee of future results. And, you know, these are our forecasts. We spent a lot of time on them, but the world can change in a hurry. Here we're showing, for those who are more visually inclined, essentially the portfolios. For those who remember those fantastic statistics and math classes from back in the day, one and two standard deviations of return. So our expectations for the next 5 years are pretty wide in terms of what returns could be in both best case and worst case scenarios. But, you know, removing emerging markets and Chinese securities does not have a significant, we would argue, negative impact on the portfolio. Let me stop and see if there are questions, because there was quite a bit of info in a pretty short period of time.
So, Jeff, it's Keith again.
Yeah.
Our relationship with you currently allows Parametric to be used in this way under that relationship with you. Do we need to look at that contractual relationship in any way the same way we need to look at our investment policy statement? To make it easier
legally,
for you.
Yeah, legally, you do not. You've given us discretion to pick managers. We can use ETFs, funds, SMAs. We've got the ability to do that. We do occasionally change managers on the active side, and we notify our clients when that happens. We don't usually go through this, but given, you know, it, roughly half the portfolio is changing, and given that there is this regulatory change in Arizona that is driving the change, we thought that this was just an opportunity for us to step through and explain a pretty significant change. So technically, we do not, Keith. To the extent that there's questions or you'd like a deeper dive, we're happy to do that, and it's a bit why we asked for this meeting earlier, to give some time to digest before these things, you know, start to change come mid to late September.
Another question is who of all the parties here is responsible for the lawfulness in Arizona of our investments? Are we supposed to be watching that? Is that part of your job as our investment manager? Following that up, is this the first time Arizona's done this, and are we expecting more, or is there a list of prohibited investees that we're not allowed to do, or is China the only one on the list, and it's not a list, it's just one?
These are all great questions. So our approach, and for what it's worth, this is not exclusive to Arizona, is in the beginning of our contract with you, it's a broad statement that says we will comply with all relevant federal, state, and local regulations.
Right.
Situations like these, sometimes, and as we get into investment policy, you know, should we put specific language in? I, you know, at the end of the day, you're the client. It's your document. So if you insist on doing it, we will. But if you try to add language for every regulation, the national, state, local level, you're constantly updating your IPS. At the end of the day, we've signed the contract saying we will comply with all of the regulations. It's our responsibility to make sure we're in compliance with those. And we take that seriously, obviously. And this is, you know, one instance where we need to customize solutions because of, some regulations that have come up. I'm not an expert. I believe this is probably the first time in Arizona. There are other states who have implemented conceptually similar approaches in terms of things that can be or can't be invested in. So this customization topic isn't unique. It's not regular, but it's not the first time we or the industry has faced this sort of dilemma. And firms like Parametric and others, you know, have done an excellent job of coming up with ways you know, if you come up with, whether it's regulatory or there are other specific criteria investors want, right, how to implement that, how to measure that. There are a number of quantitative firms who do a fabulous job of it. Obviously, we work a lot with Parametric. They're fabulous at it. But they've done conceptually similar approaches in many other places.
Are you aware of anything on the horizon that Arizona is going to do similar to this, or is there no discussion about anything like this happening in the future with other entities? Or
I'm not aware of any. Okay. I'm watching Chad's face to see if he's flinching. yeah, he's shaking his head. And you know, then there's always the what's being talked about versus what actually gets done can be a different thing. So we do have a group that's monitoring regulatory developments. It's a big part of our responsibility. We've got to be aware of stuff. But there isn't anything, knock on wood, on the horizon that we see changing here or in, you know, most states as we sit here today. Who knows? That could change.
Then let me just say thank you for handling this also. I was wondering if we were going to take a hit from the prohibitions in our investing strategy, but it looks like it's going to be tiny, if at all, right, based on the slides you showed?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So thank you for taking care of us.
You're welcome. We appreciate it. We appreciate, you know, Anna and Kim and Angel and the whole team have been great. We've been going back and forth on this for months. And to their credit, I don't want to speak too much for them. None of them have been hired to be investment experts. And then we come in with this unique thing. And of course, we don't want to take an official stand, right, on things. It's a tough spot for everyone to be in, but they've been great to work with. I'm happy that we've come up with a solution that works. One last thing we will say is, I think as a follow-up, it would make sense for the committee to step back and look at the investment policy statement. And do we need to add some more language? Our nudge would be probably yes. But we can go back and forth on that. Again, to be as clear as I can, we've got the authority to make these changes today. We should continue to have that going forward. None of this is a requirement, but you know, big, broad, sweeping language in investment policy statements aren't always great. And so being a bit more specific, I think, could be helpful. There's a counterpoint to that, too. If you get too specific, it can then constrict what portfolio managers should do. So there's a sweet spot here. That can happen over time. We will pick that topic up in future conversation. So high level, this is our timeline. We've got a couple of custody accounts, right? We talked about these SMAs. It's literally an account in our system. I'm back and forth with our ops team. And Kim, I know I owe you a follow-up on that about what paperwork is actually needed to open the account. Of all the things for me to mess up, I somehow messed up that request. But we'll get those accounts open. We expect the fixed income transition to begin around September 10th, international equity around the 21st. We're trying to balance, we want to give the managers time to, as we're selling out of the existing shares of funds, buy into the individual securities they're going to be doing. You don't want to do it all in one day. When liquidity is there, you want to take advantage of it. So these things happen over multiple days. And we've been very clear, we need to be finished at the latest by close of business on the 25th. We do have a meeting on September 14th, our regularly scheduled meeting, where we'll go through performance. We can give an update on the transition. But those are the next steps. Happy to answer any questions or anything else the group can think of here today.
Just to help this help me understand this a little better with these SMAs, are these going to be individually owned investments that we have? Will U.S. Bank, our trustee for the 115 Trust, will they be the ones actually holding the investments for us?
Correct. Okay. So there'll be an account on our custody system. Rather than holding shares of a mutual fund, now we'll hold maybe 85 or 100 individual bonds, government bonds, treasuries, agencies. The performance reporting we supply to the committee, we can do one of two ways. We can roll that up into one line item, and you can see the performance of the account. We can also show you all of the individual securities and many combinations. Yeah, that's exactly the response we get from most clients. Please do not show me 450 securities. I don't need to print those pages, but it's there. They're your accounts. They'll be on your statements. They're in your custody account. All of that works the same. It will feel seamless, or it should feel seamless from your standpoint. But again, we want to make sure there's an understanding of the mechanics are changing here.
Yeah. More work for the trustee.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? This is really the what we wanted to walk the committee through. Maybe I'll just wrap it up and say if there's any follow-up questions between now and then, further clarification, we're happy to answer. We've got another meeting on the 14th. Those transitions will have kicked off by then. But, you know, that's as expected. And unless there are other questions, I think, Keith, we can probably wrap the call for today.
I think I probably need to do call to the audience. So if there aren't any questions, I'm going to start the call to the audience. Are there any other questions for Jeff or PFM?
Nope.
At this time, the community may address the board with their concerns. The board may not address the specific concern at this meeting. However, the board may, at our discretion, make it a future agenda item, at which time there can be a discussion. Community members are asked to address the board, not a specific member. Each person will be limited to 3 minutes. Are there any members of the public here that would like to speak at this time? I'm not seeing any in the crowd or hearing anyone, so I'm going to close this agenda item. And I'd like to thank everyone for the information today and entertain a motion to dismiss, adjourn.
I'll move to adjourn.
Second. That was Anna?
Everybody. Yep, Anna.
Second. Angel.
Angel seconded. All in favor say aye, please.
Aye.
Are there any opposed to the meeting adjourning at this time? I'm going to call the meeting adjourned. 4-0. And it was wonderful seeing everyone. We'll see you all next month.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Thank you all.